Yo, yo! I don't know. I tried my own version of it. We said we would try it on this show.
There we go. You did say you're going to try it on Thursday. I completely forgot. Wait, we're starting the show on a positive note here.
That's right.
That was hilarious. Well,
that needs to be my new intro. I just need to play that on repeat.
Welcome to the Lakers Collective, everybody. I'm Trevor Lane, Jovan Buha, Jason Tipp. We're going to talk about the Lakers today. What happened last night against the Spurs? The Lakers post-win streak struggles. What's been going on over the last five games? We'll also get into the Lakers rematch coming up this weekend against the Phoenix Suns. And, of course, we'll be taking questions and comments from all of you. Guys, happy to be back here talking Lakers basketball with you again. How you doing?
It's good, man. It's good to see you guys. Did you guys ever play StarCraft growing up? Any of you guys?
No. StarCraft? Warcraft.
Okay, so in StarCraft, when you would play online, you would get tossed more complicated or more difficult opponents after you'd win a few games. I feel like instead of getting the Thunder, the Lakers getting a rematch with Phoenix is the league's way of being like, you're not ready yet. It's time for you to go back to level one and see if you can pass level one before you move on. Wow, I just can't believe how they keep getting their butt kicked in games like this. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, we're obviously going to get into that, but I'm doing well, all things considered, but obviously it's been a interesting last 12 hours.
Yeah, that's for sure. Not the loss that we wanted to see out of the Lakers eliminated from the NBA Cup tournament. They continue the trend of when they do lose, it's by double digits. And there were some things that, as J.J. Redick said after the game, that have been consistently exposed about this team. And we'll talk a bit about that, what some potential solutions can be in this one. But I'll tell you what, overall, I'm doing well. I'm excited. It's the holiday season. We've got a lot of stuff going on right now, all kinds of things being planned and all of that. I like that the weather's finally starting to get a little bit colder. I kind of dig that. I know, Jason, you've got a little different level of cold than what we're dealing with, but exciting time of year. And even if it is coming off the Lakers loss, I'm excited to get into today's show and all the topics that we're going to have.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. We had I got 7 inches of snow last week. It's all gone. It's all gone already. We've had like a bunch of 55, 60 degree days and it's just disappeared just like that. That's Denver, yeah. Apparently.
That'll do it. Okay, let's get into it. By the way, I'm seeing all your chat questions and comments and we'll see what you've got going on here. We'll get into some of your super chats and all of that as we get into the show. But obviously, a lot of people have concerns right now over what we saw out of the Lakers last night. Defensively, they definitely struggled trying to deal with the likes of Stephon Castle, with De'Aaron Fox, with Dylan Harper, trying to keep guys in front of them. I'm sure we'll probably talk a little bit about the starting lineup and how they match up defensively, get at all those things. But let's start with you, Jason. What the hell, man? Why did the Lakers struggle so badly against a Wemby-less Spurs side?
So I keep coming back to just basic physical pride in competition when it comes to handling athleticism. You know, I know J.J. Redick in the postgame presser was focused on their defensive game plan and how they were running drop coverage and defending the action 2-on-2, staying home off the ball, trying to funnel them into difficult twos. I was digging into the numbers because it kind of, when I was watching the game, like you guys heard Stan Van Gundy just eviscerating the Lakers for 48 mm-hmm. minutes. And at first I was kind of irritated because I'm like, can you mention how they've been good at some stuff this year too? You know, but like at the same time, towards the end of the game, I was like, screw it. He's right, guys. Like he just needs to talk his shit. Right. But he was, one of the things he was emphasizing was that the Lakers were actually doing some damage against the drop coverage. And that showed in the numbers. The Lakers actually got 1.19 points per pick and roll, including passes last night. That's a really good number. Mm-hmm. The Lakers got 1.09 points per half court possession. That's actually a little bit above their season average. Like offense wasn't really the issue last night. And that was with Austin not playing well. Like Austin just being like, he had some nice kick out passes to shooters. It wasn't like a complete zero impact offensive game, but he wasn't bringing the offensive firepower that he normally brings. Yet the Lakers were still pretty much fine on offense. The issue is, on the other end of the floor, the Lakers allowed the Spurs to get 1.11 points per half court possession, which was actually a little bit better than they got, and they got dominated in the margins. The Spurs got 35 points in transition, compared to just 22 for the Lakers, according to Synergy. That's a 13-point margin. And the Spurs had an 11-2 second chance points advantage, as Keldon Johnson and some of their bigger athletes just really did some damage on the offensive glass. So that's 22 points right there on the margins. And the Lakers, who are one of three transcendently great half-court offenses in the NBA, it's them, Denver, and the Thunder. Those are the three teams that get over 106 points per 100 half-court possessions this year, according to Clean the Glass. There's a pretty wide gap after those three before you get to fourth place. So even though the Lakers have this transcendently great half-court offense, they were not able to generate any margin there against the Spurs, and the Spurs killed them in the athleticism parts of the game. And so I think there's two ways to look at it. I think there's obviously some roster stuff. Like, I don't think it's a coincidence that Marcus Smart was +2 last night when you've got a guy who can play a little bit of defense and hit some threes. Obviously, he hasn't been hitting threes for most of the season, but you got to see what that looks like when you have a player on the floor off of the big three that can hit a catch and shoot three and can play a little bit of defense. It kind of rounds things out for those lineups. But ultimately, to me, there were stretches in that game where the Lakers did compete athletically. There were like these little 4 or 5 minute bursts. We saw one at the end of the second half. We saw one kind of in the middle of the fourth quarter where it's like, that's how they're going to have to play against these teams, or they're going to get punked. They got to play like that, especially between now and the trade deadline for whatever reinforcements they bring along. They're going to have to at least make an effort to compete physically against some of these other teams, or they're just going to continue to get punked the way that they did. And I think it's good they get Phoenix. What is it, Saturday? Because they are Sunday, because I think
Sunday,
need a, Sunday, yeah. I think they desperately need a palate cleansing win to demonstrate that they can keep up with teams like this.
Jovan, JJ said after the game that the Lakers were not winning in the margins in this game. Do you agree with that? And then what do they do here? Can they solve this just based on effort, the issues that we're seeing?
I think that's part of it. You guys know where I'm probably going to go, so I'm not even going to necessarily go there. But starting group continues to be a minus. Doesn't matter whether they win or lose. The starting group gets outscored. It's just like clockwork. So you guys know how I feel about that. But to JJ's point, I mean, Jason mentioned it with the transition, but looking at second chance points, 11-2, looking at the free throw battle, like that to me was a really key thing in terms of 16 combined fouls for Luka, Austin, Marcus, and Gabe. And you see San Antonio +13 at the free throw line in terms of attempts. Like, we rarely see the Lakers get dominated at the free throw line. That is one of the areas they typically win or at least hold their own. So I think right now the margins are a big thing, especially against these types of teams, but they just really struggle against, like, I think there's a few things that you have to hit as an opponent to have a decisive advantage against the Lakers. And unfortunately for the Lakers, about like half of the really good teams in the NBA check these boxes, but you have to have a baseline level of speed and athleticism, which, like, most teams are faster and more athletic than the Lakers. They are one of the slowest and least athletic teams in the league, but especially against, like, that margin is bigger against some of the top teams like an OKC, like a San Antonio, etc. But then you also need multiple ball handlers who can get downhill, either score or create driving kick opportunities, which San Antonio did at will last night. You also need a certain level of shooting, which San Antonio has in the form of Harrison Barnes and Champagne, and Keldon Johnson's hitting multiple threes in the first quarter. What are the pregame highlights for me that were like the quotes of the year for JJ? Was he was talking about that someone asked him about shooting and how you quantify a laser and how you game plan for that. And he said, you know, there are lasers and there are tasers, and tasers are the guys that you are shocked when it goes in. And clearly the Lakers game plan was to leave Keldon Johnson. They were playing off of him and he cashed a few of those, just like San Antonio was leaving Marcus Smart. And then the final thing that you need is to be able to pressure the ball and ideally stay out of rotation, stay out of having to double the Lakers. And San Antonio checked every single box. I think OKC checks those boxes. Phoenix obviously checked the box in the one matchup they've had. So Lakers have some real issues here in terms of trying to navigate this weakness, because this is a real weakness and they are getting their asses kicked when they play this type of opponent. One thing that I looked up after the game that I think really stands out in how LA is losing is, right now, if you look at just losses, across the league, LA is 29th in net rating in losses. The only team worse than the Lakers in losses right now is the Wizards, who are a dumpster fire. And if you look at some of the top, OKC, first in the league in net rating and losses. Denver, second. Houston, fourth. And then the rest of the top 10 is all good teams. Detroit, Miami, San Antonio, Boston, New York, Minnesota, Orlando, Cleveland. If we're like ranking the top 10 teams in the NBA, basically, in some order, that is the top 10 in net rating and losses, except for the Lakers, who are at the bottom of the league with the dregs of the lottery team. So like, they got to figure this out, because when they let go of the rope, they get absolutely destroyed. And like, a loss is a loss, whether it's 1 point or 30 points, but they need to have some more competitive losses here, because every loss this season has been by double figures.
Yeah, it's been a big concern that they are, you know, losing by this many points when they do lose. And I think it's a combination of are there effort situations? Yeah, I mean, you think about the Harrison Barnes dunk at the end of that, I believe it was at the end of the half, that he got, where the Lakers transition defense just went, nah, we're just going to kind of jog back. You know, we'll take a nice, brisk, leisurely jog back, and we're going to give up the dunk in transition. That was right after one of the big momentum plays of the game, that LeBron dunk, and then the Lakers came right back and hemorrhaged. I think it was a quick 4-0 run to San Antonio coming off of that. So some of this is effort related. I thought the Lakers, the focus wasn't necessarily there, but there's also an element of what we're seeing right now that is simply personnel. It is athleticism. It is the speed, the quickness that the Lakers don't have. And that's nothing new. That's nothing that's a surprise. We knew this was going to be the case coming into the season, that they were going to be at an athleticism deficit, and that it would have to be something that would be addressed midseason. Unfortunately, their Achilles heel has really proven to be something that when they do run up against these teams, they really get beat badly. And that's what we saw happen last night. Jeffrey said of the Lakers, the slowest team in the NBA. Thank you guys for your insight. Again, we'll get into most of the super chats at the end of the show here, but it really is a speed concern for the Lakers. And, you know, again, not to harp too much on just the starting lineup, because Marcus Smart did play a number of minutes in this one. But when you're starting Rui and Austin and Luka, you've got LeBron defending, say, Harrison Barnes. Sometimes it was Luka. You've got Ayton, who's defending Cornette, and then that leaves Steph Castle, that leaves Devin Vassell and De'Aaron Fox being defended by Austin, Luka, and Rui. I mean, you're at such a foot speed disadvantage there that it really created a lot of problems for the Lakers, and that's something that's going to be difficult for them to rectify. But to continue talking a little bit about the margins, you look at what the Spurs did against the Lakers: 86 shot attempts for San Antonio, 87 for the Lakers. Spurs shot 50% from the field, Lakers 49%. Lakers shot 43% from three on 37 attempts. Spurs shot 45% from three on 38 attempts. So we're pretty damn close across the board there, right? The Spurs, though, 36 free throw attempts compared to 23 for the Lakers. You can't shoot the same number of field goal attempts and have one team shoot 13 more free throws. The math just is not going to work for you to win that game. When JJ's talking about winning these games on the margins, you can see where, and he talked about how if teams shoot well against them, they struggle. They're not doing the other stuff right now against these teams that do have athleticism. They're not forcing turnovers on them. The San Antonio Spurs last night, 10 turnovers. The Lakers have improved their own turnovers over the last five games or so. They've gotten much better. They've been more of a middle of the pack team instead of a bottom of the league team in turnover percentage. But that's also coincided with a dip in the amount the Lakers have turned their opponents over as well. So they're not getting extra possessions via turnovers. They're not necessarily crushing the offensive glass. Had 6 offensive rebounds last night compared to 9 for San Antonio. So it's very difficult to win if the opponent shoots well and the margins are all kind of going against you. Some of that, I think, can be addressed via just some changes in the rotation. Maybe it is, you know, leaning on Marcus Smart. But some of this, guys, when I look at, I think, man, you're not really going to solve this problem until we get into something on the trade front. Unless, and Jason, you tell me, because I have a lot of fans asking, why not turn to a Jared Vanderbilt, particularly when the Lakers went to the small ball lineup? If you need athleticism, you need defense, you're lacking in those areas, it's getting you lit up all game. Is it time to revisit the idea of Jared Vanderbilt?
Well, I think when you're facing defensive coverages like they've been facing in some of these matchups where they're guarding the action 2-on-2 and trying to force Luka and Austin to be scorers in the mid-range, when they're not going to overreact as passers, or excuse me, when they're not going to overreact and make you a passer by defending that action 3-on-2, I think it does make sense to kind of bolster the lineup with more athleticism. Ultimately, like, there's a different look that makes sense for the different types of lineups you have out there. So, for instance, like Jake LaRavia, it was a disaster in his shift last night. And he ended up getting one clean catch and shoot in the left corner, which, if I remember correctly, was a little bit of kind of like a semi-transition kind of chaos mm-hmm. situation that he missed. But it's like, if you're not going to get a bunch of catch and shoot looks, like, where I really like Jake LaRavia is when, you know, you're getting blitzed and there's a lot of these 4-on-3s, and Jake's just a kind of savvy, versatile, do everything type of offensive player. But what he's not is a standstill catch and shoot guy. That's just been a, you know, I saw that there was a hilarious comment from Gary earlier in the stream. He said the Lakers are full of tasers. And that's what I think when I watch them. Like, there's just, other than, like, there's Rui. I think LeBron's a good catch and shoot guy. Austin's been a good catch and shoot guy this season. But it's like Gabe, it's like when the shot goes up, I'm like, maybe, you know, like when Marcus, it's like, I mean, he got a heater, but like when he took that first above the break three, I'm like, let's see if he can get it over the front of the rim. And it was like 2 feet short of the rim on the first one. It's like, there's just a lot of guys for the Lakers that are like, yeah, they can make a three, but they're not like knockdown shooters. And so with that being the case, when they're facing these kinds of coverages and they're seeing more like 2-on-2, stay home off the ball, let's see if Luka and Austin can beat us with a bunch of mid-range scoring, I think it does make sense to anchor them with more athleticism. And I think there's a bigger picture conversation to have about, like, looking at the future, LeBron retiring. I think we all agree Austin's perfectly fine as a number two. How do you support these two guys? And the answer to me is pretty simple. You got to support them with athleticism. And so I think there's a kind of a larger concern that I have that goes back over the last half decade with Rob Pelinka, and one of his issues with the complete lack of basketball identity that he embodies, where there doesn't seem to be a specific type of player that he targets in the draft or in free agency. And I think Rob Pelinka needs to have a come to Jesus moment in terms of his basketball philosophy and understand that starting with this deadline, moving to next summer, moving to the following deadline, he needs to, in the next two or three seasons, completely revamp this roster with athleticism. Because if he doesn't, you're going to continue to see this problem. Austin and Luka can only handle so much athletically. You've got to find a way to support them. And I think that that's some of the poor decision-making of recent years coming home to roost here.
Jovan, do you see that being the path forward for the Lakers? Athleticism? And have they, I mean, they need to make those changes. You need to, if you were to conceptually build a team around Austin and Luka, you are going to go for super switchy, athletic, defensive players, kind of similar to the way the Mavs were built before Nico did Nico things. But are the Lakers, have they already, like,
gone? Has anyone caught more just random strays than Nico Harrison over the past 9 months? On just like every podcast? I do it all the time. I can't help myself.
And rightfully so, you know. No, but yeah. Also say, hey, Nico, come to LA. You're never paying for a meal in LA. Just come on. You're very welcome here. Maybe not welcome around the Lakers because Luka, but you'd be welcome in LA. But can they, are they already started to head down that path? And did the selection of Adu Thuro maybe suggest that they are recognizing, hey, we need athleticism on the wing, and it just takes some time in order to ultimately acquire those things?
Yes and no. I think they've done a really poor job of identifying two-way talent since the Russ trade. I think really, like, I don't want to relitigate the Russ trade. I've done that 100 times, but mm-hmm. going back to that point in the LeBron era, from that moment of trading away KCP and Kyle Kuzma and losing Alex Caruso, they've just not had the appropriate level of two-way talent. And I think that's why the LeBron AD era ended the way that it did. And I think that's why the Lakers lost in the first round last year. Part of it was depth as well and not having a playable center. But I think that still is the biggest issue on this team right now, right? Like, I think if we go player by player, Rui is a clear plus on offense, but is also a clear minus on defense, especially when used as a wing stopper perimeter defender. I think if he was playing at the four more, that's a different story, and you'd probably see better defensive shifts from Rui. But in the current role, he's playing out of position. He's asked to do like he's chasing Devin Vassell off screens, which just is not a Rui Hachimura strength. And then you look at Gabe. He's not really contributing on either end right now. Like I thought Darius Soriano of the LFR pod had the perfect tweet that summarized how I feel about Gabe right now. He needs to be defending at a higher level to justify how many minutes he's playing and the lack of overall production that he's giving you. Like Gabe's getting blown by all the time, and he's continually having like 2 to 4 fouls out there because all he can do is foul guys on drives because he can't keep them in front of him. You have Marcus, who had the shooting performance of his life last night, but most nights has been a minus, at least from like a shooting perspective, obviously is a plus on defense. Jake LaRavia, I think, has been a plus on defense, but has been a minus on offense, especially recently, but like is very up and down on that end. So, and then we get to Adu and Vando, who we know about their shooting limitations and the offensive side. So it's like, just down the roster, most of these guys are only pluses on one side of the ball and sometimes negative on the other side, to the point of it being difficult to justify playing them more than like 10 to 15 minutes. So I think it's a real problem. And it is a concern to the point of like, I don't know if one trade fixes this. I think it might have to be a couple of trades and more of a reshuffling of, you know, maybe bringing in a new starter, but like really shuffling the bench, because right now I don't think the status quo is good enough.
Really quickly, to Jovan's point, there's kind of a version of this type of deadline. Like, take the big fish, like Herb Jones, you know, Andrew Wiggins type of trade, set that to the side. There's a version of like roster balancing where you can kind of like, because there are some of these guys, like part of the reason why Rui has been a bad on-off guy for the Lakers is he's playing out of position. He was very, very good for the Lakers before LeBron came back because he was playing the four consistently. That's not LeBron's fault. LeBron's a better player than Rui. But Rui is now being played out of position, and that's hurting his impact. There are guys like Jake LaRavia. There are guys out there that would bring value in a different system. Someone out there is going to see some value in a Dalton Connect. The 2018 Cavs, if you guys remember, right before the deadline, they kind of had a similar situation where they felt like they were too old and slow. And they just made a kind of like they went for a bunch of kind of mediocre castoffs, the Rodney Hood, Jordan Clarkson, Larry Nance types. But they came in, and what they were is they were kind of like similar, you know, level players in terms of their reputation and value around the league, but they were different archetypes. So they gave up some of these more skilled, you know, an Isaiah Thomas, a Jay Crowder, a Dwayne Wade, some of these players that ended up finding value and use elsewhere. But they brought in players that were younger and more athletic that were considered flawed, but they were at least achievable trade targets. And then what happened? They played alongside one of the greatest players of all time, if not the greatest, at the peak of his powers, and they found roles that made sense for them, and that team went on a finals run. And so that's kind of the kind of turnover that I think this Lakers team is destined for, is like kind of like almost like a 3-for-3 or a 2-for-1 and a 1-for-2, where they swap out like a good chunk of the rotation for other cast-off mediocre bench players that are just more athletic, that fit more what the Lakers need. And ultimately, a player's value as a basketball player is unique to their team and what their team needs. And if this team needs athleticism and you bring in an athlete, there will be more of a positive return there. Just like if you put Rui in a situation where he can go play the four, he's going to be more valuable for that team than he can be for the Lakers right now.
You know, Jason, with what you're talking about, what Jovan mentioned just moments ago, guys being put into roles that, you know, maybe are a little bit above their pay grade, or at least not in their wheelhouse. So, you know, Austin Reeves being relied upon to be a primary point of attack defensive player, when that's obviously not going to be his best defensive role. Rui having to chase guys off of screens, that's not his best defensive role. Could there be a multiplying effect where you were able to add a piece here or there that can fill some of those roles and then re-slots some of the players like a Reeves, like a Rui Hachimura, into other positions? And then so you see those guys improve, so you get like an outsized impact beyond just the value of that player coming in. Is that really probably the best case scenario, that you're able to add pieces that are filling the roles that guys are being pushed into right now, and that pushes other players back into their natural roles, and then the puzzle pieces fit better? Is that really the kind of ideal trade deadline that we're looking for?
I think so. I think if you go, I mean, part of it, it continues to be why I harp on the starting group in terms of if you have Marcus Smart out there, you can put him on the De'Aaron Fox. You could put him on the Devin Booker or the Dylan Brooks when Dylan Brooks starts to cook. You could put him on the Jaylen Brown. Like I think the ideal fifth starter for this team, whether it is making a starting change or making a trade, is someone who could defend 1-3, potentially even 1-4 in some matchups, and take on the primary offensive force for the opponent, whether that's a point guard or whether that's a wing. Because again, looking at like a Boston, you'd want that player on a Jaylen Brown. Looking at a San Antonio, you want them at the point of attack, the head of the snake with De'Aaron Fox. And I think right now, it's the Lakers are in a tough spot where it's either they're playing an elite point guard and they're putting Austin on that player and then also asking him to have a certain usage and role offensively and also play top 3 minutes in the NBA, or they're playing an elite wing and they're putting Rui on that guy. And that's just, I think at this point, like not really what like, I think he's been better at that assignment in the past, but I don't think he's been quite up to par this season in that regard. So I just think either way, they're kind of in a tough spot where they're putting a primary point of attack guy or wing stopper that should not be in that position. I like Austin as a secondary backcourt player. I like Rui as ideally like the lesser front court defender, right? And that's just not really the way that the Lakers are set up right now. So I do think, again, whether it's putting Marcus in there or making a trade for, another report just came out about Herb Jones and New Orleans. I mean, I think there's a little bit of game of chicken there going on in terms of trade value and whatnot, but regardless of if it's a Herb Jones or someone of that ilk, that player, I think, could have an outsized impact on the Lakers because they will be the now the thing then becomes like the switching. And like, I think you might have to change your scheme a little bit and not soft switch and, you know, be a little bit more selective in that regard. But if you can get the right fit guy, I do think that guy being the primary guy against both guards and wings will just slot everybody else in a more appropriate role defensively.
All right. I want to talk a little bit about the Phoenix Suns and that matchup coming up. And I think you're right. Ultimately, if we can make those kinds of moves, and I'm sure we'll talk plenty when we get to the questions and answers section about trades. But Jason, real quick, I want to ask you about Austin Reaves, because last two games, he's played 39 and 40 minutes. He is 9-for-32 shooting. And this is a guy who's been better than 50% from the field on the season. He's been absolutely fantastic scoring the basketball. JJ has sort of alluded to him being out of gas and that the Lakers have relied upon him so heavily. Do you buy that? Or is this a athleticism issue that's coming into play? Because I'm seeing a lot of the comments of, oh, well, this is what Austin Reaves really is, and this is what Austin will look like in the playoffs. How do you weigh in on that?
I do think fatigue has played a role. I want to be clear. I think it's a little bit worse than even you described. I know he put up a big box score night against Boston, but he was abysmally bad in the first quarter, and it was a huge part of why they fell down so much. Like, he couldn't make a shot, and he had a bunch of turnovers in his first shift and looked completely physically overmatched by Jordan Walsh in that first quarter. And so, like, he's been pretty bad in basically three of the last four games by his standards. I think fatigue plays a role. I think that there's a certain amount of like, hey dude, guess what? This is what the max level all NBA type dudes are asked to do for 70, 75 games in an NBA regular season. And I don't want to be overly critical of Austin, because the truth of the matter is Austin each season is just taking on so much more. And what we've seen with him is this pretty consistent trend of like, he's given a ton of responsibility, and at first it's pretty messy, but then he kind of figures it out. And then he's given a bunch more responsibility, and it's at first it's kind of messy, and then he figures it out. So, like, for instance, when he first took over as point guard over D'Angelo Russell, it wasn't perfect at first. Like, there were some bad games in there. There was some sloppy stuff in there, and then pretty soon it became clear that he was fine. And so, like, I think this is just, like, with each new challenge for Austin, there's come a new kind of thing that's come to the surface. And with this one with Austin, it's been fatigue. And I think that's the next step for him, is coming to the point where he can play at this all NBA level, not for 20 games, but for 40 games or for 60 games or for 80 games. And I think there's a physical conditioning element. The schedule is going to be helpful for him here. He had, I think, two full nights off before this Spurs game. He has three full nights off before this Suns game. So whatever fatigue element going on for Austin, he's got one game in a 6-day span here. So he should be able to get his legs back underneath him. To me, like, you know, I looked at Austin and I thought he was a little physically overwhelmed. I want to kind of shift gears here really quick to Luka for just a second, because I think there's an interesting trend going on with him juxtaposed with a guy like Shea. And one of the things that happens when you're one of the best basketball players in the world is there's other dudes who want your spot. And it becomes this very competitive environment. Like, in a classic example for me is LeBron and Steph. Like, LeBron was this Swiss Army knife dude in the early 2010s, but then on comes Steph Curry. And it's like, oh my gosh, is Steph Curry the best offensive player in the entire NBA? And what ended up happening? LeBron in 2017 and 2018 added like a complete additional layer of polish to his game in the half court that made him so good offensively that he was able to keep a step ahead of Steph Curry as he was playing at such an insanely high level offensively. And one of the things that's standing out to me with Luka is like, he fills the box score like nobody's business, but he is having way too many of these damaging plays where he's hurting his team on either end of the floor. Trevor, you called out a perfect one earlier in the show. It was inexcusable, that play before the half. LeBron makes this unbelievable basket attack, gets a dunk. The Lakers run back in transition. They get a stop, big play. They go down the other end. Shout out to Luke Kornet, made an incredible athletic play at the rim blocking Austin. I don't think that's anyone's fault. Like, Luke came flying in there. I don't even know how Austin could have seen that coming. But then they go down. De'Aaron Fox hits a really tough floater. You go down and Luke is complaining at the refs again, not getting back on defense. So is Jackson, which, by the way, you want to know why Jackson's doing it? Jackson's not doing that if Luke is running back on defense. But you have two guys standing in the backcourt while Harrison Barnes walking into a dunk. Luke has been very turnover prone. He had several sequences last night where he got caught standing out of his defensive stance for quick swing passes to Harrison Barnes that ended up in threes, where if he's just a little more attentive, sitting in a stance, throws a quicker closeout, he's in better shape there. And this is where I want to juxtapose him with Shea, because I think that Luke is every bit the scorer that Shea is. And I think that Luka is a better passer than Shea is. And that makes up any little gap that you might see between the two of them on defense. But right now, Shea's not making any damn mistakes. He is never turning the basketball over. He's not having sequences where he complains at the refs and doesn't get back in transition. He's not having sequences where he's standing and ball watching off the ball and letting a dude back cut him or giving up an offensive rebound. Luka's got to trim the fat in his game, because I think Shea's past him now. And if he's going to catch up, if he's going to get back into that conversation and be able to compete with the very best players in the world, I think Luka's got to make an intentional effort to trim the fat in his game.
Yeah, I mean, I think that particularly that play was damning, the one that I referenced where they were not getting back, and that was off of a Luka turnover. He just tried to throw a pass that simply was not there. Part of that was, as I recall, it was LeBron and I believe it was Rui both occupy, or maybe it was Smart occupying the same space in the corner. Nobody popped up to give themselves any kind of spacing out there, so they let one defender defend both of them. I think it was Harrison Barnes that was able to get the steal there and then get running the other way. And the Spurs looked content on that possession to just pull the ball back out and then take the final shot of the half, yeah, until they went, oh, wait,
it's 3-on-5. Wait,
you're just going to give us a dunk? Okay, I guess we'll just take this. It plays like that simply cannot happen. And that's part of that is Luka. Part of that is, I think that's more of a disturbing trend we've seen with the Lakers in general, where they just kind of switch off for portions of the game. But certainly that's an area where Luka's got to get a bit better. And I do think he's been better defensively this season, but the effort plays went San Antonio's way, and it was for good reason, because they were more athletic, more aggressive. The effort was more on their side of things. They were definitely doing what they could to win this game. They played like they were desperate to win that game, and the Lakers did not. And so, rightfully, the Spurs played the better game. They deserved to win that game. And the Lakers, I think a lot of that's going to show up in film, and the Lakers are going to have some things to answer for, especially coming into this matchup against the Phoenix Suns, which is yet
one
another
tiny
team.
Little note that Tommy, yeah, said this in the comments. It's also the shots. Like, there were a couple of ones where it's like the Spurs have momentum and Luka would just walk into like a step back three with like 22 on the shot clock. And I'm like, come on, man. Like, those are as bad as turnovers. And so I think Tommy in the comments is making a good point too. I think that's one of the other parts of the fat that Luka needs to trim.
That is a great point. There were some shot turnovers. While the Lakers didn't turn the ball over nearly as much as they have recently, some of their shots ultimately resulted in turnovers. Now, you'd rather have a shot than the turnover, obviously. I mean, look, even you had what? Champagne shot the ball from half court and it turned into an offense offensive rebound for San Antonio and they got a three out of it, right? You know, we obviously rather have that, even if it's not a great shot, just because it keeps the possession alive for you potentially. But they did have some shots that effectively were turnovers, because as good as the Lakers offense has been, if you are, and that's perhaps where, when we talk about the margin for error not existing, if they are not disciplined on the offensive end, it puts their defense in a bad way. And I thought we saw a lot of that, especially in the first half, where their offensive discipline wasn't quite there. And that really magnified their defensive issues, because the Spurs were just getting in transition over and over and over again. All right, let's talk about the upcoming matchup against the Suns. Let's get into that, because this is another team. This is a team the Lakers just lost to. What is it now? A week and a half ago. It was 125-108. That was without Devin Booker. Dylan Brooks went insane. Was celebrating in LA on their home court. This time it's going to be in Phoenix. How do the Lakers stop this trend? How do you get a win on Sunday against another team that has an athleticism edge on you? Not to the same degree, maybe, as the super quick guards on San Antonio. Certainly not to the same degree as OKC. But how do you go into Phoenix and get a win knowing that you're going to be posed with some of the same challenges that have plagued the Lakers this year?
I think it starts on the defensive end, which might be counterintuitive based on LA struggling in some of these deep drop coverages that they've faced, or struggling with turnovers and getting pressured 94 feet or even within the half court. But I think it has to start with the defensive side of the ball. Like, I think about that Philly third quarter and just most of that second half, and it's like, I would like to see that level of urgency and physicality. I thought the Lakers off-ball defense for that half and for that quarter was just night and day from what we see on a given night. And JJ highlighted that before the game, and I think for whatever reason, LA came out with a level of urgency that they did not come out with. Like, that the beginning of the third quarter was a disaster in terms of, you're down 12, you made this run to close the half, and then even again, give up that Harrison Barnes dunk, but like, all right, you have some momentum, you come out and you just give up two wide open threes to the Spurs that now extends the lead up to 18. Before you know it, you're down 20, and basically the game is over from that point. You make the fourth quarter run, but it doesn't really matter. So like, LA's lack of urgency at times defensively, and them just having this like on off switch on that side of the floor is just like, that can't happen moving forward. So yes, the ball security, Austin cannot get picked at half court twice, where he's just holding the ball and it gets poked out and De'Aaron Fox is getting out in transition. That cannot happen against Colin Gillespie and Phoenix's perimeter defense. They need to get back in transition. That's another part of the defensive side where we talked about freeze frame it. You see where both teams are starting out, and then 2 seconds later, you have four Suns players at the rim, one Laker back in transition. Like, that can't happen in that matchup as well. But it's going to be, this is a really interesting stretch here for LA, because they have four straight road games, two at Phoenix, one at Utah, one at the Clippers, leading into that Christmas Day matchup with Houston. So they're going to get a couple cracks at Phoenix, then some lesser teams in the Clippers and Jazz. But like, I think this is a nice stretch for them to build some momentum going into that Christmas Day game. And I think for me, first and foremost, it has to start with an attention to detail on the defensive end, calling out off-ball screens, making sure you're switching properly, making sure you know if you're switching or staying with your man, making sure, like, I thought DeAndre Ayton had a really nice start to the game in terms of helping out when guys were getting beat or even in drop coverage. He was contesting, he was staying big. I thought he walled off several Spurs drives and several paint opportunities. Then that kind of went away throughout the rest of the game. So like, I think everybody needs to be locked in with an attention to detail that they just did not quite have against San Antonio. And when they get punched in the mouth, they have shown an ability to be resilient. They've had, I believe they said on the broadcast last night, 6 double-digit comebacks this season. But they also have an ability to let go of the rope. And I would like to see them. You'll get the haymaker from Phoenix at some point in the first half. Can you keep it close, stay within striking distance, and then ultimately win the game?
Yeah, I agree. It's going to take the defensive side of the ball, the attention to detail is going to have to be there. You know, Phoenix is going to have that defensive pressure up. I'd like to see them have a bit of a counterpunch to when the pick and roll does get blown up by the Suns. I want to see the Lakers utilizing the LeBron Luka pick and roll is a bit more of a challenge when it's Ryan Dunn and Dylan Brooks in this game, and then it's just a switch. So it'll be interesting to see how they navigate that. But the attention to detail is going to have to be there all night long, because the Suns are going to have a bit of an athleticism advantage. They are going to be putting that pressure on the Lakers. They cannot turn the ball over in this one the way they did last time. I harp on turnovers a lot, but they had, I believe it was 21 or 22 against Phoenix the last time around. They have to do a lot better taking care of the basketball. But it's all going to start, as Jovan was alluding to, with the mentality against Phoenix. Do the Lakers really want to come out and prove that they can hang with this type of team, that they can beat this type of team? Did this loss to San Antonio in the NBA Cup tournament, the money they lost out on from potentially winning the tournament, did that bother them or not? I want to see that. I want to feel that in this game on Sunday, that they have something to prove as they get into this stretch, and not that this is just, you know, another game in a long 82-game season. I want to see this Lakers team come out and show that they can indeed win in the margins. Jason, what are you looking for in this one?
I think Jovan laid it out really well. I think the one thing I would add is just, I want to see a level of physical intensity from the opening tip. Like there's a little bit of like a, you know, Jovan broke it down earlier in the show when he was talking about the losing margin, but like they're getting punked in these games. They're not losing, they're getting punked. And what I want to see is the Lakers come out and be like, I want revenge against Phoenix. I want to see them get up in jerseys. I want to see them throwing bodies around and bringing a level of physicality to the game. Because ultimately, like when you look at teams that are, you know, the best example for me for the Lakers to follow as I've looked at this team has been Denver, because Denver, I think, is the classic example of like a really offensively gifted superstar who is somewhat of a defensive liability in certain coverages. With Jokic, it's more of a pick and roll thing. With Luka, it's more of like an on ball and switches kind of thing. But then you're also surrounded by kind of like somewhat mediocre athletes with a handful of athletes on the roster. I'd argue Denver's more athletic. And that's, by the way, why I view them as the model, because if you add a couple of support athletes around these skill players, it can be really effective. But when I look at Denver, Denver had stretches where they got punked, right? Like I'd argue Minnesota for stretches of the 2024 series punked them in that second round upset that they had, right? But ultimately, when it comes to this Lakers team, like what you see with Denver is they would also have games where they would do the punking and they would bring a certain level of physicality. They went into Minnesota in the middle of that series and they won two games in a row. There's a level of like, yeah, you did that to us, but we can do this too. And that's what I'm dying to see from the Lakers. Other than the Minnesota games early in the season, we haven't seen the Lakers go up against one of these like truly physically dominant teams and bring it to them physically. And I really just want to see them do that in this game. It's very much a mentality thing for me. I want to see some fight. I think you laid it out perfectly too, Trevor. There's a psychological fight that I want to see from these guys.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We need to see this team punch back in this one and be ready to get out there and take it to the Phoenix Suns. All right, we're going to get into some of your questions and comments in just a moment. First, quick shout out to our great sponsor, which is Underdog. We'll be back in 1 minute. Don't go anywhere. We're going to be taking your questions.
Our sponsor, Underdog, has you covered for all your sports picks this season. If you're new to Underdog, use our code COLLECTIVE and you'll get $75 in bonus entries when you play your first $5, win or lose. Here's how it works. Just pick higher or lower on two or more player stats and you'll be in the game with a chance to win up to 5,000 times your money. The Underdog interface is super easy and intuitive to use, which I appreciate. Personally, I'm looking at these three picks right now. And the best part is right now you can make your picks in most states, including Texas, California, and Florida. So remember, that is code COLLECTIVE over at Underdog. You could also find our link in the description below. A big shout out and thank you to Underdog for sponsoring this show.
All right. Again, thank you to Underdog. Appreciate them for keeping us going, keeping us growing, and appreciate all of you who have hit the like button and subscribe as well. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button for us. And if you haven't done so yet, give us a 5-star rating and review over on Apple Podcasts. We'd like to get some more reviews in there. Go find Lakers Collective on Apple Podcasts. All right, let me get to some of your questions and comments here. We've got Euro Chuck Norris. Euro Chuck Norris. That's a good one. I used to do Chuck Norris jokes with all my kids, and when I was teaching, there were some really, really good ones. Like, did you know that Chuck Norris can kickstart a car? Okay, I think they're funny.
I thought it was funny.
All right,
that was a good one.
Took me a second.
Jesus can walk on water, but Chuck Norris can swim through land. You know, stuff like that. Anyway, can we just focus on copying the Dallas blueprint? Luka and Austin Reeves stay. Rest of the team is expendable for trades. I mean, I think they certainly can focus on trying to build out that blueprint, but that's also not an overnight. Like, the trade season unofficially kicks off December 15th. I wouldn't expect the Lakers to just immediately, you know, wave the magic wand and suddenly they've got this army of lanky, super athletic, switchy defensive wings that can also shoot the ball. Like, finding those pieces is probably not an overnight situation. That it's going to take some time to build out the team around Luka and Austin.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Lakers need their version of, I wouldn't say PJ Washington and Daniel Gafford, but I would say PJ Washington and Derek Jones Jr. I think, mm-hmm. as we have discussed before, as Jason was talking about earlier, like, to complement and surround Luka and Austin with the requisite two-way play and athleticism and length and tenacity and defense. So I think that's what they need. Now, realistically, just based on the roster construction and the contract situation, that might not be something they can truly do until this offseason, depending on what happens with LeBron and his contract situation. So it might have to be something that longer term they make some bigger moves. But as constructed, I do think it would be helpful to add that proper fifth starter and then also probably another two-way player off the bench.
I want to add to this idea, forget about copying the Dallas blueprint. How about copying what all the good teams are doing in the NBA, which is just being athletic? Like, if you look who were our finalists last year, Indiana and Oklahoma City, two incredibly fast teams. Who's the number two seed in overall in the NBA right now? The Detroit Pistons. They're really athletic on the perimeter. Houston, big and athletic. The Knicks, they're anchoring their two stars. The reason why they've been really good this season is Josh Hart, Mikal Bridges, and OG Anunoby are these rangy athletes that can cover for all of their mistakes. San Antonio, big and athletic on the perimeter. Boston, big and athletic on the perimeter. Minnesota, big and athletic on the perimeter. Orlando, big and athletic on the perimeter. Toronto, like, that's literally your top 10 seeds, top 11 seeds in the NBA right now. They're all big and athletic. The Lakers stick out like a sore thumb on that list. In Denver, even with Aaron Gordon and Christian Brown out, they've got, you know, Peyton Watson coming in and being athletic in that position. Like, they've got athleticism. So it's something where the Lakers, and frankly, Rob Pelinka has been way behind the times for years now. It's become a significant ball and chain that the Lakers have been dragging. And one of the things, Jovan hit this earlier, and I think this is important. They're not going to do it this offseason. They're not going to do it this deadline. It's going to take years to completely revamp this roster with the requisite type of talent. So there's got to be a short-term kind of solution. And mm-hmm. to me, beyond small tweaks in the roster, that's where it goes back to what we were talking about in the last segment. There's got to be a level of physical intensity that this team plays with, because they can't afford to not play with that intensity because they're not athletic enough.
And the challenge is those types of players that you're talking about, every team wants those players. Yep. Like, hey, OKC, what are you going to add to your, what can you add to your team? Well, we can always use more athletic, switchy wings that are, that can shoot, right? I mean, every team is looking for those things. So that's going to be the challenge for Rob Pelinka to go land those pieces. But that's also why you get paid the big bucks, right? You got to figure out a way to get it done and add those things to the team. And we'll see if they're going to be able to accomplish that or not, but it probably will take some time to actually add those guys. Particularly it's tough when you're on the trade market too. And like, Dalton Connect hasn't hit. So like, there's one of your trade assets that, you know, isn't as valuable as you would like it to be. So there's going to be some real challenges there. ASAP Mimic said, Trevor, don't hear what I'm not saying, Lane. Jovan, more than one thing can be true, Buha. Now we need one for Jason. What is your catchphrase? Do you have a catchphrase?
I don't know. Someone's got to tell me. I feel like I've got two or three just phrases that I repeat all the time. It's so impossible to not have things that you repeat when you talk, right, as much as we do.
Absolutely. Exactly. Exactly. Austin is an elite playmaker, but not an elite shot creator. Not a Kyrie Brunson. He struggles versus defenses that don't allow him to get downhill. How do we get him downhill versus these big athletic teams? I mean, my initial thought is through the pick and roll, right? That's how they've tended to give him that little bit of an edge, because he does, just kind of like Luka does a nice job when he does get shoulders past a defender, putting that player in jail and not allowing them to get back around. So he's done well there, but he's not going to get that edge just by burst. He needs to get the defender off balance a little bit, needs to get them leaning the wrong way. And that's when he's able to then create that advantage. So it's through screens. Now, can you do some stuff off ball? Can you do some more work there? We've seen Luka in an off ball role every once in a while, coming off of a little curl, things like that potentially. But Austin's not the kind of guy where, I mean, just throw a name out there. If Mikal Bridges is defending Austin one-on-one, he's not going to throw a killer crossover or something like that and just break the man down completely eviscerate him with pure athleticism and speed. He's going to need something to help create that edge for him.
Yeah, I mean, I would quibble a little bit here with elite shot creator. Like, I think we have enough of a sample size of Austin dropping 40-plus as the number one option and the Lakers winning those games that I feel like it's, I was talking about this last night. Like, I do feel like with Austin, we can sometimes, like, the floor can be concerning for sure. And that is something mm-hmm. that he has to address if he's going to be in this top 10, top 15, top 20 conversation. The floor needs to be higher than it is, because most of the guys, if not all the guys in that conversation, don't have the performances that he has in some of these matchups against athletic teams. And he certainly struggles against athleticism and length to an extent, physicality as well. But he also has an incredibly high ceiling that a lot of players don't quite have. And we have seen him function as the number one and for most of the season as the number two in a way that, I mean, there was a reason why for up until what the 2021 game mark, like Luka and Austin were having a historic offensive start together as the highest scoring duo. And of course, Luka's carrying more of that load than Austin, averaging 35 a night, but Austin was also averaging 28 a night and putting up certain numbers. And you do want to see it against OKC. You want to see it against Phoenix. You want to see it against San Antonio. So like, I'm not saying he does not have a lot of room to grow and improve and be a more steady player in those matchups. But I also think we've seen a ceiling from him that, like, to say he's not an elite shot creator, are there certain matchups where you can stymie him? Yes. I would also point to, like, you know, Kyrie had a really rough finals against Boston. Mm-hmm. Jalen Brunson was not quite Jalen Brunson that we've seen in New York in Dallas. And Jalen Brunson could also be picked on defensively in a way that even Austin, like, for all of his foibles on that end, he's just got 5 inches on Brunson that, like, you know, that matters. So, yeah, I mean, I little bit of a defense of him here. Like, again, he was bad last night. I thought it was his fourth worst game of the season, with the other three all coming against other athletic teams. But and two of those coming recently, right, with Philly and San Antonio last night. But I also think, like, he's shown a certain ceiling that I think it's a little, like, too reactionary and in the moment to just say he's not an elite shot creator.
Yeah, I agree with literally everything Jovan said to a T. He's averaging 28, 6, and 7 on what, like 63% true shooting, something along those lines. He's run, according to Synergy, he's run over 400 pick and rolls and ISOs this year, and on them he's generated a 113 offensive rating, including passes, which is, like, off the charts good. So, like, the ceiling is clearly the ceiling. The averages are clearly the averages, but his floor has been abysmally bad. That's really the narrative. And so, like, yeah, there's these handful of games where he's been really bad, but Jovan laid it out perfectly. There's, like, once you get off of that Luka, Giannis, Jokic, Shea tier, there's a lot of dudes that also have bad games. There's a lot of dudes that also have nights where they can't make shots, or where they're damaging defensively, or where they miss too many reads, or whatever it might be. Like, Austin to me has entered into that conversation. He's just so new to that level of hoops that I think we're seeing some sneak peeks of years past where his floor is really low. But I think I'm always a believer in Austin in the big picture. We're just dealing with a phase in his career right now where his floor is pretty low as that, like, secondary star.
And I think part of the challenge with the conversation around Austin Reeves is that no matter what you think about Austin, you're going to have evidence to support your claim. Yep. And so that creates a lot of the back and forth, right? Because if you are of the mindset, like we had a lot of people over the summer, Austin and Luka, it cannot work. It can never work. Fire Austin Reeves into the sun, eject him from this team. That was some of the commentary over the summer. And you'll point to a game like last night and go, see, that was true. This is what Austin Reeves really is. Everything else did not count. That's what he really is. That's what he will be in the playoffs. And then if you're on the other side, you can say, well, look at what he's done over the course of the season. Look at the numbers that he's put up. Look at the big scoring games that he's had. Regardless of how you feel about him, there's evidence you can point to and focus on. And so it creates, again, this conflict between those who are on Austin's side, those who are not across this, you know, discourse of Lakers fandom.
I undersold him, by the way. He was at 67% true shooting on the season. And so let's just
damn
put
you,
it
Jason.
Like, let's put it like incredibly simply. Luka has never, like, he's averaging 28-6-7 on 68% true or 67% true shooting. This is quite simply, in a smaller sample, obviously, the best number two Luka's ever had statistically. Like, and it's not particularly close. Like, he's literally, every time Luka's out, he's giving you 40 or 50 and getting a W. Like, he is Austin's Austin. This conversation is very strictly about these handful of situations where he shows a low floor.
Simple question. Do we trust Rob to get what everyone else knows this team needs? So, Yovan, we look at what Rob has done historically. Do we? I can see you're bracing already for this. Do we believe that? Because it has been a bit of hit or miss, right? On one hand, you've got the guy who traded for Luka. You've got the guy, and I thought negotiated the hell out of that trade. Mm-hmm. Landing Dorian Finney-Smith midseason, I thought it was a good deal. He's made some legitimately good moves over the years. We could also point to the Russell Westbrook trade. We could also point to mid-level exceptions being used on guys like Gabe Vincent and Lonnie Walker and Montrezl Harrell and Kendrick Nunn and those things and all not really working out. How much faith do you have that the Lakers can land? We talk about, is there a short-term fix in addition to the overall long-term goal to add athleticism? How much faith do you have that the Lakers can get that done?
I would say I have cautious optimism, and the reason I say that, if you asked me this a year ago, and I mean, it would have aged poorly if you asked me this a year ago, because then they would have traded for DFS a couple weeks later, and then they would have mm-hmm. traded for Luka a couple months later. But at that time, I would have said no. I think if you look at his past year with the DFS trade, the Luka trade, and then the offseason they had, and the bargains that they got and were able to plug some holes on the roster, I think the front office has been trending in the right direction. You could also throw in drafting Adu, some of the two-way guys and some of the decisions they made with that. I think they have more hits than misses over the past year that's underselling it. Like, I mean, they traded for Luka, right? My concern though, and where I have some skepticism is like this specific need has been a real need for the roster for years and a real blind spot for the front office for years, where even DFS was like, you know, the DFS had been on the trade market for like 3 years and no one wanted to give up a first round pick for him. And finally the price got low enough to be under a first round pick. And then, you know, the Lakers got him, but they also got him kind of in, I think, the tail end of his prime. And I mean, he hasn't even played this year. We don't know where he's at physically, but even that was like DFS was at a different phase of his career physically than where he was at 2-3 years ago as one of the better 3-and-D wings in the NBA. Like he was far more effective in those small ball groups as like a big man defender, as like a rim protector almost, rather than being like a wing stopper. So I think the Lakers have just simply not been able to identify. Again, we went through the list of the current roster, but we could go through the years. It's always like an athletic defender who can't shoot, or a shooter who, like, you can kind of squint and see it defensively, but not as like the primary guy. And they've not been able to find the sweet spot of a guy who's like an 80th percentile guy in shooting and in defense. And I think that's the type of guy they need. So, I mean, we've talked about Herb Jones, Andrew Wiggins, Dylan Brooks, like those types of guys. If they could get one of those guys, then sure. But if they can't, and I think we just had the report on Herb, Brooks and Wiggins are on teams that right now don't seem to be looking to sell them off. if we now get into like the bench level guys, that's where I have some just concern of their ability to find the right guy. And then also, do they have the requisite assets, or will they meet the asking price of if a team is demanding something that they don't want to give up? So I think they're in a tough spot, honestly. If they can't get one of those top, I would say like tier one, 3-and-D guys that are potentially out there, if it gets to the tier two, that's where I have some concern of their ability to actually identify the right player.
And the frustrating part with all of that, of course, is in 2019, 2020, they had those guys. They had the big, tough, physical team that could defend, that could also, their shooting was a little bit of a question, but they were good enough shooting the basketball. And it's like they've never quite been able to get back to that. After they left that, they went, oh no, we should not have left. We should have stayed. And they haven't quite been able to get back to that or find the pieces that are going to build that team out, because now everybody is followed, and it's shifted a little bit since then, but has essentially followed that model of trying to fit, two stars, multiple defensive pieces that can shoot and defend multiple positions. And it's a real challenge now to acquire those kinds of guys. Let's go here. I believe our best trade option this season, if we're going to have any chance, Herb and Ellis. Ellis is a good 3-and-D guard behind AR and Luka. Herb is our fifth starter. Hope we make it work somehow. I mean, the Dan Wojcicki piece from The Athletic today had even Keon Ellis's asking price, despite the Kings not even really using him as much as they should, the asking price on him being high as well. Now, that said, 'tis the season, right? Prices get more realistic the closer to the trade deadline we get. That's something we see pretty consistently year in, year out. And right now, it doesn't behoove a team like the Pelicans to send any kind of signal that they'd be willing to trade Herb Jones when they can't even trade him. He's not trade eligible until January 14th. So take it with a grain of salt, but the pieces the Lakers need are not going to be inexpensive pieces to acquire.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, this kind of thing tends to be at the time in those 2 weeks before the deadline, they tend to materialize. We've talked about this a lot on these Laker Collectives pods over the last few weeks. Like, there's the achievable stuff, which is the 7th, 8th, 9th man in your rotation swaps that you can do around the league, like a guy like Oshae Igbaji, that kind of thing. And then there's that big starter swap, the Rui plus a first to get a starting three. That probably won't happen. It's a pipe dream, but if that opportunity arises and the right circumstances materialize in early February, I think you jump on it if that opportunity comes. But yeah, everything's going to be working around the margins at this point.
All right, let's go here. JJ just loves offensive players himself, not dogs. I mean, I don't know. Like, it definitely, the Lakers have pushed towards offense and away from defense and athleticism and towards offensive execution. But to me, at least as I've talked about on my show, that's been leaning into maximizing Austin and Luka, saying, what do we need to do to get the absolute best out of these two guys? And that means having spacing out there on the floor rather than leaning in further to defense and maybe not maximizing what you're getting from Austin and Luka, because you have, say, a Jared Vanderbilt on the floor, which means an extra defender just camped in the paint. Where are you guys at on that in terms of the Lakers pushing more chips in towards the offensive side of the ball rather than the defense, and in some ways paying the price for that?
I don't think there's an obvious set of defensive players to play. Like Vando, we've talked about, he just comes with a bunch of issues. He checked in for a few minutes the other night and got left wide open in the corner. We talked about this in the Monday show. Mm-hmm. To me, JJ understands what this team's strength is, which is that they're one of the three truly elite half-court offenses in the NBA. So he's just trying to lean into their strengths, which makes sense. I believe that if there was better defensive talent on the roster, I think he'd be playing those guys.
I got to give a shout out to this guy for Jovanović. That's my guy.
I just noticed that. All right, let's go here. LeBron's sixth man, start Vando, most problem solved. I mean,
LeBron's not coming off
LeBron's not coming off the bench. That's the thing, right? That's not happening.
Did you guys see, I don't think LeBron's been great on defense since he came back, but I thought he was fine last night. He was one of the few guys that when like Steph Castle was on him with the ball, I was like, he actually might be able to keep him in front. And like, again, it wasn't a perfect game from LeBron. He took a bad transition three that I didn't like, but like, I thought it was hilarious how many of the bad actors came out of the woodwork last night to blame LeBron for all their problems.
He had 3 chase down blocks. He had 15 rebounds, 14 defensive. Like,
he was playing really hard. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, he showed up defensively.
Mm-hmm. Bron dunked on Cornette. Lakers got stomped on like a mat. Rob better not stand pat. Okay. Lakers not winning in five. Also, Jason, no more playback sucks, man. Yeah, that's sad.
A bummer. I enjoyed playback.
It was a lot of fun.
R.I.P.
R.I.P. playback.
I did it three playbacks and then and it ended.
You came in right at the end. We've been doing it for a number of years, and they were a lot of fun. And really unfortunate that it just wasn't able to stick around. Hopefully it does get, you know, reincarnated at some point, as can happen. Austin Reeves is a regular season star, but liability come playoffs, the same way Kevin Love was on the Cavs, just the guard version. And I've seen that take a lot on Austin Reeves. Well, he's awful in the playoffs. Well, he was really good in the playoffs. His first season of the playoffs last year was not good. The season of the middle was largely not good. We have a larger sample size of him being good in the playoffs. We're just farther removed from that when we look at total games played. But Austin can't do anything about this conversation until the playoffs. And that will obviously be an important time for him to, you know, he heard all the talk, all the conversation over the summer, and he's not going to be able to address that until the playoffs come around in April.
Nothing to add. I think you nailed it.
I mean, did you see that stop that Kevin Love had against Steph Curry in game 7?
Good point. Good point. Jovan, come playoffs, they will just spam an action to get Austin Reeves switched onto the other team's star guard.
I mean, yeah, I can't. I have nothing for this. Like, there are ways to obviously counter this, and you can pre-switch and scram switch, and you could load the floor a certain way, which the Lakers have done against certain players. So there are counters to this, but I mean, yeah, that's just the reality of Austin will be targeted. And I think the Lakers have several players that will be targeted, but Austin, you know, does come to mind, especially against certain bigger wings or forwards. But yeah, I mean, I think there are ways to counter this and ways to kind of try to stymie it a bit, but it's just the reality of the situation. Playoff basketball is mismatch hunting and target hunting to a degree, and Austin is one of those guys.
And just about every team in the league has one of those guys, for the record.
Simply can't trust Reeves in the postseason. We just talked about that, so we won't rehash that. The fatigue excuse for Austin Reeves is essentially saying he can't handle a star's workload.
We talked about that too. That's the next step for him, is like, yeah, like the all NBA dudes, they find a way to not be this bad in game 30 of the season or whatever it is, game 25.
How do the Lakers solve the offensive stagnation and recent struggles against elite drop coverage defenses without a stretch five option on the roster? Now, Jason, as I recall earlier in the show, you were talking about they played well against that drop coverage. And Luka is a kind of player that should be able to beat drop coverages. But so maybe that's just kind of the fact that they lost the game bleeding into our perception of what they did offensively.
Again, it wasn't like they're capable of playing better offensively than they did, but they were over their season average. Their pick and rolls were deadly. They actually shot the ball really well, thanks to Marcus Smart. Like, they lost that game because they allowed the Spurs to score a bit more effectively than they did in the half court, and they got dominated in the margins, 11-2 in second chance points and 35-22 in transition points. Like, that half court offense was not the issue last night.
So we go here. Do you all think OKC would still be better if the Lakers had 09 LeBron instead of 41-year-old LeBron? So if you got a time machine and went back and you got that, that version of LeBron is an elite defensive player.
Yeah, he'd solve all their problems.
But he solves a lot of problems for every single team. So that would change a lot for the Lakers. Let's go. Jason pointing out Luka's lapses is like criticizing the wallpaper when the building's on fire. I agree. He does need to set a stronger example, though.
So, okay, Sarah, you weren't as dramatic as some of the other people in the chat were being, so I'm not targeting you specifically here, but this is a huge pet peeve of mine. He's one of the four best basketball players on planet Earth. Do you want to, after a game last night, look at Jake LaRavia and ask him to save you from your problems? He's not capable of it. There is a level of basketball that Luka is capable of reaching that is capable of solving more of the Lakers' problems than anyone else on that team is. And when you're in that unique four, that group of four, there's a big drop off after that group. Like, you run into Victor, he can't handle a double team. You run into Ant, like, he's every time he runs into rim protection in the postseason, his offensive game falls apart. Like, there is a chasm once you get off of those top four guys at the top of the league. They are in unique company as the very best basketball players in the world. There's a very different standard that you're held to there. Who did I compare him to in that rant? Did I sit there and say Luka is making too many mistakes and we're talking about him compared to Jalen Brunson, or we're talking about him compared to Jaylen Brown? No, I compared him to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, the defending MVP, the defending finals MVP. I'm comparing him to the best of the best. We are splitting hairs among that group. And I pointed out what I believe to be true, which is he has lost ground against Shai in the last couple of years, because Shai has completely trimmed mistake making from his game, and Luka will fill the box score and have a game like last night where he makes like a half dozen errors on each end of the floor in various ways. A bad shot here, a bad turnover there, leaving Harrison Barnes open here because you're standing out of a stance or whatever it might be. And that does undercut his success. And it is worth mentioning when you're comparing him to the very best basketball players in the world. Again, like, if you want to go to Austin Reeves, who's, you know, 25, under athletic, and is just newly starting to explore his new potential as a star, and ask him to save you, it ain't going to work right. If you go to 41-year-old LeBron and say, save me, it ain't going to work. If you go to all these flawed role players, it ain't going to work. Luka is the dude with the superpowers. He's the one dude that is capable of staring down the best basketball players in the world and being better than them. And here's the thing. If the Lakers get to a series with OKC and Shai's better than Luka, they're fucking losing. They're losing. The only way they're going to have any chance to beat anybody is if he can go into a series with Jokic and go toe-to-toe with him, if not outplay him. Go into a series with Shai and go toe-to-toe with him, if not outplay him. That's why that stuff is worth discussing. Ultimately, the Thunder will shed some of their role players. They're going to have to pay dudes. Eventually, they won't be quite as talented as they are when Chet's making 50 and J-Dub's making 50 and Shai's making 60, right? And the Lakers, with Rob, will support him with athleticism and make moves, and they'll have better rosters. But push comes to shove, it's going to probably come down to Luka versus Shai and who's a better basketball player. And so I think it is worth discussing. I think it is worth discussing the little tiny things that separate these all-time great players. It is a compliment to be evaluated that granularly. It's because you have entered into the rarest of basketball discussions. I cannot stand it when people are like, how dare you criticize our star? Because he's literally in rare company. He's the one dude who can save you. Sorry. But no. Again, Sarah, you weren't as bad as some of the others in the chat. I saw some people, if Luka left the Lakers would be trash. Yeah, because he's one of the three best players in the world. He's literally one of the greatest basketball players on planet Earth. There is a different level of responsibility that comes with that.
This all falls under my catchphrase of, don't hear what I'm not saying. By the way, that was an epic rant. that was awesome.
I get so frustrated. That
was
that
awesome. But the problem we have on a societal level is that we are so conditioned to hear that something has to be completely good or completely bad. So if people hear something that's negative about a player, the assumption is to immediately jump into defense mode, right? Because if you are a Luka fan or Luka stan or whatever, it's, oh, no. It's not Luka. It's that. It's everything else. We're not allowed to say anything bad about this player. Or it's the other way. God, I hate Luka. He's the worst. Everything has to be bad. Anything he does good, no. It's this guy did it. It's not him. It's not what he did. Everything gets pushed into these extremes, and that robs you of honest analysis. It's okay to say, hey, this player is really effing good, but he also has these things that he can work on. That's all just taking steps forward and growing as players, because guess what? Players are not static things. It just bleeds into that much bigger conversation. But yeah, you're absolutely right. Luka has areas of his game that he can improve, just like a lot of players have. That doesn't mean he's not one of the very best players we have ever seen in this game.
And I like Luka more than Shai. I want Luka to pass Shai. I am emotionally invested in Luka becoming a better basketball player than Shai. These are things that I'm rooting for him to do better.
All right, let's go here. Grantway said, buy low Haywood and Cam. Is it Haywood Highsmith? He hasn't played this year. He's been hurt. And Cam Thomas at first, keep Rui depth. I mean, Haywood Highsmith hasn't played, and I don't know that Cam Thomas solves what ails the Lakers here. I don't mind keeping Rui, but all right, let's go here. Do you think there's a world where the new owners hire a GM, let Bron retire, sign Austin Reeves, and then cash in on all of our assets to begin a rebuild?
I don't think you can rebuild in the middle of Luka or the beginning of Luka's prime.
Yeah.
But I think Rob just got extended earlier in the year. I think he's going to have at least next season, if not longer, in terms of you did the Luka trade, you got extended. I don't think, barring a disaster with this season, I just don't see any way realistically that his job is in jeopardy. The LeBron retire, I mean, that's a LeBron decision, right? Like, I don't think the Lakers have really any control over whether he retires or not. Signing Austin, of course, that is a priority for them. Now I think maybe like reshaping the roster, which is kind of what we've touched on at various points of this show, is more realistic. But if you have Luka and Austin, you're too good to I think it's impossible to rebuild. Even if you put like G League players next to those guys, you're going to have a certain floor of like, I think 40 wins at a minimum. So, I don't think that's really possible if you have Luka and Austin on the roster.
Agreed. Yeah. I don't see them going down that path. All right. We are way into overtime here. I have saved the remaining super chat questions. I know we all have places we got to go run off to, but rest assured, we will get to the remaining super chat questions. I just want to finish with this one. Jason's catchphrase is, I promise I'll cut my hair. People are so fascinated with your hair, Jason.
I don't know what I'm going to do, guys. I think if I find a haircut that I like, I'll probably cut it. But I don't know when that's going to be. What do you got, Johan?
All right. If Jason cuts his hair, we need to live stream it on Lakers Collective. and we need to have the live reaction.
We need to do that for sure. That's a must. That will be our top rated episode. No question.
Speaking it's a lot easier Rangers. For basketball now too that I can put it in a ponytail. Like if I cut it somewhere in the middle, then it just becomes a pain in the ass. So there's that too.
So you got to go all in. Got to go all in. Everybody, make sure you do hit the subscribe button. Turn on those notifications as well. Don't forget to like the show and check us out over on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts, guys. Great time talking Lakers basketball with you again. Even if we spent a lot of time on what's wrong with the Lakers, it was an important conversation, and as always, this has become my favorite parts of the week, so appreciate both of you.
Appreciate you guys, appreciate the chat. We'll talk to you Monday.
Yeah, see you guys on Monday. Let's hope that the Lakers beat the Suns so we have something good to talk about.
Let's go See you everybody.
I'm gonna predict it right now. They're gonna go beat the Suns
There it is. Lock it in. See you everybody.